Our next speaker is Gary Simons. A global profile on language development versus language endangerment.
All right, thank you, John. So my co-author is Paul Lewis, who's not able to be at the conference, but I'll be reporting on collaboration we've been doing for the last 4 or 5 years as we've been working together on editing the ethnologue. So here's an overview of what I'll present. First, I'll begin by reviewing Joshua Fishman's GIDS as a means for assessing the relative safety versus danger of languages. Then describe eGIDS, or the expanded GIDS, as a scale that we have developed for use in ethnologue to report the status of language development versus endangerment for every known language. And then I'll present results from our global survey of language status that have just been released in the 17th edition of ethnologue. So we begin with GIDS, the Graded Intergenerational Disruption Scale, from Joshua Fishman's seminal book on reversing language shift. He developed GIDS as a measuring rod for language shift. And on this scale, level one is at the highest, strongest level of the scale, and that represents an official national language. And at the bottom of the scale is level eight for dying language. And then between the six levels between represent successively more functions for a language in society. And the scale measures disruption, which is why the higher numbers represent the weaker languages. They represent higher level of disruption for future intergenerational transmission. The basic premise of GIDS is this, that language shift, ending in extinction, happens as a language loses functions in society. To reverse language shift, the community must engage in development to bring those functions back. We wanted to use GIDS in ethnologue to describe the status of every known language, but we ran into some problems. First of all, we needed to add extinct languages to the bottom of the scale, and in doing so, we wanted to keep the ethnologue distinction between dormant and extinct. We also wanted to add international languages at the top of the scale. And then GIDS gives only two levels of endangerment, but we wanted to harmonize with the four levels from UNESCO's Atlas of the World's Languages in Danger. So this resulted in eGIDS as a 13-level scale. So here are those 13 levels. So one thing to note is that we've added a descriptive label to each level to make it a little bit easier to talk about them for those who haven't quite memorized the numbers yet. But also note that we've retained Fishman's numbering. So that when we added international to the top, we had to make it zero. And we also have split Fishman 6 and 8 in order to get the additional levels of endangerment. So we called those 6A and 6B in order to stay aligned with his numbering. A particular interest to the language documentation community is the endangered end of the scale. So here's how the eGIDS levels align with the UNESCO scale. And what's particularly of note is to point out that we've distinguished dormant from extinct. And this actually came about, we started doing this in the previous edition of Ethnologue 4 years ago, in response to a lot of email that kept coming in from language communities, or at least ethnic communities, that we labeled as extinct. And they said, what do you mean? We're not extinct. And especially when they were trying to revive their language or still had symbolic use of the language, even though there were no L1 speakers, there still was very much use of the language in terms of symbolic use of language. So therefore, we've made this distinction between dormant and extinct. So this slide shows an overview of the basic logic of eGIDS. The top four levels of the scale represent vehicular languages. In these cases, the language is widely used, not only within its native community, but by other language communities as well. Then the next four set of levels are local home languages. In these cases, the language is used by people of all generations within its native community in the home domain, The next set of four are heritage languages. The language retains an identificational function for its native community, but is not used fluently by all generations. And then at the bottom, extinct languages, where no one retains a sense of ethnic identity associated with the language. To subdivide them with each of these groups of four, we have a diagnostic question. So for the vehicular languages, the diagnostic question is, what is the level of official use? So at the top, we have zero, international. The language is widely used between nations in trade, knowledge exchange, and international policy. Then level one, national, the language is used in education, work, mass media, and government at the national level. Two, provincial, the language is used in education, work, mass media, and government within major administrative subdivisions of a nation. And three, wider communication, the language is used in work and mass media without official status to transcend language differences across a region. For the local home languages, the diagnostic question is, what is the sustainability status? So for that, we have level four, educational, where the language is in vigorous use with standardization and literature being sustained through institutionally supported education. Then level five, developing, the language is in vigorous use with literature in a standardized form being used by some, though this is not yet widespread or sustainable. And 6A, vigorous, the language is used for face-to-face communication by all generations and the situation is sustainable. And 6B is threatened, the language is used for face-to-face communication within all generations, but it is losing users. At this point, I'll put in a comment to reference back to the presentations by the Project Lyle Campbell's heading up that we heard yesterday, where in their calculation, and there's a poster on it out here too, their calculations, he reported 47% of languages as endangered, and the question came up from the floor that they just seen our figures on Ethnologue, and we had a number more like 33%. I was wondering what's going on. Well, I checked the poster to see how it was calculated. And the thing that's going on is what we see here, that we're only calling it threatened when there is, when it is said that the language is losing speakers. It turns out that half of the languages in the world have fewer than 10,000 speakers. And in the calculations that Lyle's project is using, the number of speakers is one of the criteria. And when it's the only data available, the fact that it has fewer than 10,000 speakers makes it qualify as threatened. So I think that is what explains the difference between, we're basically saying one third, whereas his project is reporting 47%. Then for heritage languages, the diagnostic question is, what is the youngest generation of proficient speakers? So at level seven, shifting, the childbearing generation can use the language among themselves, but it is not being transmitted to children. Then 8A, moribund, the only remaining active users of the language are members of the grandparent generation. 8B, nearly extinct, the only remaining users are elderly, and they have little opportunity to use the language. And 9, dormant, the language serves as a reminder of heritage identity for an ethnic community, but no one has more than symbolic proficiency. So having developed this scale, we then wanted to develop an eGIDS estimate for every known language. We followed these steps to generate an initial estimate for every language. First, we used an automated script on the Ethnologue database to assign a level based on information in the description of a language. Then secondly, if the Ethnologue gave no clue, we consulted the UNESCO Atlas to follow their assessment if it had been identified by them as endangered. And then third, if there was still no specific clues, so we still didn't have a value, then we assigned level 6A vigorous oral language as the unmarked case, following Fishman's observation that the lion's share of the world's languages are at GIDS 6. But then we submitted these initial estimates to a review process involving two strategies. First, we sent the estimates to our worldwide network of field reviewers and entered their corrections. And in this process, we had 90% returns from what we sent out. And then secondly, we implemented 37 different database queries to look for potential inconsistencies between eGIDS values and other data in the database. This led to deeper editorial review of about 1,500 language descriptions. As a result of this, both of these kinds of review, we ended up that 8% of the estimates went up, 47% went down, and 45% remained unchanged. So with all that background, then here's our answer as of Jimmy just released on Monday when we put our website out. That here we see a histogram showing for all known languages where they stand on this scale. So the height of the bars in this graph is the number of languages. So we see 2,500 is the height of that green bar. Then across the bottom, we have the eGIDS levels from 0 on the left to 10 on the right. The total number of languages reported here is 7,480. And these are all of the languages in the ISO 639-3 standard, which were living in 1950. So we've, for the sake of summarizing, to make this even simpler, reduced from these 13 levels down to a more manageable number. And that's what the color coding is about. So the ones from 0 to 4 that we code with purple, we're summarizing these by calling them institutional languages. That the language has been developed to the point that it is used and sustained by institutions beyond the home and community. And here we see 682, or 9% of languages. Then the blue is developing, that the language is in vigorous use, with literature in a standardized form being used by some, though this is not yet widespread and sustainable. Here we have over 1,500 languages, or 21%. Then the green, for vigorous, the language is unstandardized and is in vigorous use among all generations. There we have 2,500 languages, or 33%. Then yellow, we're calling that group of 6B plus 7 in trouble. Here, intergenerational transmission is in the process of being broken, but the childbearing generation can still use the language, so it is possible that revitalization efforts could restore transmission of the language in the home. And here we find 1,480 languages, or 20%. And then 8A through 9, the red, we're labeling as dying languages. Here it is too late to restore natural intergenerational transmission through the home. Here we have 904, or 12%. And then finally, the black for extinct, the language has fallen completely out of use. There we have 377 since 1950, or 5%. So those are things I just read. Okay. The purpose of this slide is to highlight an innovation that we are making in our approach to summarizing the status. So you're all familiar with endangered as a label, and on, see it on the right, in essence, the three levels of the UNESCO scale that are levels of endangered are represented there. But what we're doing in our summarization is to put the critical divide between 7 and 8A, because we believe that that's where the most critical point is. That above that line, where we were calling it in trouble, it means it would be possible for revitalization efforts to restore transmission in the home, since people in the parent generation still can use the language. Whereas when we go at the 8A and below, at that point, revitalization is going to require developing some kind of institution outside the home to kickstart revitalization. So here's what it looks like, the report of this summary on our new website. So you click on the World Languages tab there, you see a summary graph of those five color-coded levels. On this map, when you click on one of these areas, it goes down a layer, and then you see the summary graph for that area. And the area will be subdivided into regions, following the 22 UN regions. So Africa, for instance, is divided into five regions. When you click on one of those regions, you get a map of the region, you'll see the summary for the region, and then you'll be able to go in country by country. And in fact, as you hover over these things, you get a pop-up, so you can actually compare the profile for that region or country with what you're seeing on the right for its larger, the area it's embedded within. When we start exploring like this, you immediately discover that the severity of the language endangerment differs markedly by areas. So here's what we see for just those five major world areas, where now we've got the number of languages, so that Africa there in the green is over just over 1,000. But we see Africa is where languages are the most vigorous. I mean, Asia, we're starting to see quite a bit of the in trouble category. It's come up quite high. The Pacific, proportionally quite a few in the in trouble and endangered. And then the Americas, where the situation is the worst. And Europe, where it's kind of flat all the way across, but there aren't very many languages left in Europe. So it'd be interesting to have had these figures from hundreds of years ago. It might have looked a bit different. And then we can go down a layer. These are the 22 UN regions. And they're ordered here by proportion of endangerment, where endangerment is the yellow plus the red. And the scale, the up and down scale here is percentage rather than absolute numbers, so they can be comparable. What we see here is that the first four regions where there's the lowest level of endangerment are four of the five regions in Africa. Western Africa, Eastern Africa, Southern Africa, and Middle Africa. And we go down to the bottom where it's the worst, and those four along the bottom are Polynesia, then South America, then Australia and New Zealand, and then Northern America. And this is just an illustration of one more kind of visualization that we've put on the new website, something we're calling the language cloud at this point, which is the background here is one dot for every language. It's a gray dot, so that where it's black, it means there's five or six or lots of dots on top of each other. But the up and down is the population, but on a logarithmic scale, so that it all compresses nicely. Then across the bottom is the EGIDS level. So the largest and strongest languages are in the upper left, and the weakest and smallest languages are down in the bottom right. And so here's the graph for English. We've got a purple dot, and we color code the dot by those color coding that we've used throughout. So English is a purple dot way up in the top left corner. Next one I did here is Hawaiian Pidgin. That's a blue dot in level 5 at the upper end of the population range for level 5 languages. And then the other one is Gerbil, where it's a red dot in level 8A down toward the bottom of the population range for those. So, conclusion. We believe that EGIDS is shedding light on the global language situation. We find that of 7,480 known living languages since 1950, that 9% have reached the safety of institutional transmission. At the other extreme, 5% are now extinct and 12% are dying. In the middle, 21% are developing, 20% are in trouble, and 33% remain vigorous and undeveloped. We also find that the level of endangerment crisis varies by region. In 4 of 22 UN regions, in the Americas and Pacific, more than 55% of languages are in trouble or dying. Whereas in 4 of the regions, all of which are in Africa, fewer than 20% are in trouble or dying. So that's conclusion. So open for questions now. Can you help me with seeing people?
Oh, I just had a couple of things, and the first was just a clarification. In terms of the, once you sort of mined what was in Ethnologue in terms of what vitality clues you had, And then there were several where you had really no clue, you said. And was that at the point that you sent out surveys to your field surveyors? Or was that, where was that 90% of your field surveys come in?
Well, it was after we did one, two, and three to come up with an initial estimate. So we had an estimate for all 7,000 plus languages. And then we sent all of those out country by country to our field reviewers.
So that 90% number was for all the languages that Ethnologue is in?
It means that like when you send out a survey and how many responses did you get, we had 90% response.
Okay.
We, 10% of languages no one ever responded about.
Okay.
But for 90%, someone actually looked over it and made adjustments.
So I'm curious because, I've worked on the Endangered Languages Catalog, and I'm curious about, were any of the people who responded to your surveys, were any of them sort of torn about what level to assign to a language because of conflicting sorts of issues in the language? So if there are children learning the language, but the language is really shrinking in domains or various other factors that could be contributing, I mean, sometimes it's hard to just give one number on the scale. I'm wondering if you guys have done anything about that.
Well, that's always the problem.
Yeah.
But the rules of this game are you have to choose one. So you have to go with your gut. I mean, ultimately, it's a gut feeling anyway when we get all these conflicting evidences and we want to be able to put it on a map or put it in a chart. We have to pick something. So it's basically asking people to make that judgment. And Paul and I, as editors, overwrote a lot of what came back. Because when we would read all the words in the Ethnologue description and then compare that to the number, we'd say that number does not match those words. So we would typically, we put more faith in the words than in the numbers in terms of the people responding to us, did they really understand what the system of numbers was all about? So we tried to reconcile them to match the description that was given in words. I've actually posted already on my website.
I just want to make one comment. Some yesterday in our presentation was asking about reconciling the numbers, and I did a quick calculation that in the endangered language catalog, we said there were 3,176 endangered languages, and if you add your dying languages, languages in trouble, and extinct languages, that's 2,761. So it's not a big difference, particularly since we have some things in ours that might just be dialects of the same language.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, John will have to say this, but did we opt for 10,000 when we had no other information? I thought it was 1,000 or even 100.
It was
our cutoff point. John, are you?
I'm over here. It depends. It depends on whether or not you count the vulnerable and et cetera, those languages on the higher numbers scale. So it was actually, 10,000. Where it was one of the levels that we had on the scale. And if a language ended up on there with only speaker number information, then they would be considered, they would be in the catalog.
That was actually one of the examples on the chart, so I didn't have to try to figure out the formula.
Yeah.
One of the examples actually showed that case.
That's why we offer the circle T2 in our scale.
Yeah.
Those are truly unfortunate cases if we want to get information about this.
Yeah.
We don't have to rely on that arbitrary number anymore.
Yeah.
Any more questions?
I don't know, when I see all the levels of the scale, at some point it seems that we are comparing different things, I don't know, different languages, different styles of languages. So for instance, some languages will never go up into that scale. Like, they might be forever just what you guys call vigorous, for instance, or to the most extent curriculum or educational. So I was wondering, when you try to match these categories to the exact languages, if you also have this kind of mismatches like when you intend to put every language in a scale, if you don't get more like positivist approach to the thing that this language needs to progress. This is good. Am I being clear?
I think so. I mean, the claim, you know, Fishman wasn't saying by reversing language shift that we have to get every language to be a national language. He was just observing that if it's a national language, it has far less likelihood of falling down the scale than if it isn't. It turns out that we have a prime example here in Hawaii of a language that in the 1800s was a national language, had a vibrant education system, had daily newspapers, universal literacy. It was a national language. And the territory got taken over, new policies, and the language plummeted. So even being at the top doesn't guarantee anything, but it's a way of just of saying where, in terms of how many functions in society does the language have, does it fall? And many languages will never go above six. That's fine, and you can have stable diglossia where a language has an identity and a home function at level six, and that can stay sustained for hundreds of years, where people are using a language higher up the scale for education. So it's not. That's not saying that every language has to get up there. It's just an observation of where our language is in terms of this system of identifying functions that languages
have. Because it has a model of society, of functions in society, right? So some societies have different functions, and then when you put in scale, of course, yeah, the goal is the global scale. So you have the mainstream function of global scale. But anyway, when you apply to particular cases, that might misrepresent the vitality or endangerment of the language. If you just do like a survey of endangered languages, that's kind of my feeling.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. That is great work, and this helps us to finally be able to be more specific than just estimates when it comes to language endangerment. So the first statements about it was possibly, or at least public, greater statements were by Michael Krauss in 92, right, where he said half of the languages are dying right now, and more 40% might be in a very bad situation at the end of this century. So I would like to hear your evaluation of that sentence 20 years ago, because my impression is, despite that your numbers look much more positive than that, that statement is still not really wrong, because when I look Brazil, the language, the country where I have knowledge about the situation of many languages will go into your category, vigorous or even developing. So all children are learning the language and so on. But still, I see the cultural, economic, social, political context changing so quickly in such a dangerous way that I still would say I'm pretty sure that many of those languages by the end of this century won't have many young speakers, and probably transmission will be stopping by that point. And that is not in this estimation because it depicts the current situation of the languages. But still, I feel it's a little bit dangerous to say vigorous or even developing if I feel still the label endangered should also apply to those languages. So I would like to see how your assessment matches with what Krauss said 20 years ago.
It turns out that Paul Lewis and I actually wrote a paper on that. That's going to be, was it that Wisconsin symposium a few years ago, and it's going to be published in their proceedings. It's actually a 20-year review of that paper. But I mean, you're absolutely right that the fact that it's green now doesn't mean it's going to be green 10 years from now or 20 years from now or 100 years from now. So we're not trying to prognosticate. We're just saying, what's the situation today? And there certainly is a place for, if someone wants to work on predictions for when it's green, how long is it going to stay green? But that's a different kind of thing. And the one thing that we can do with these levels, that even with the 6B, which the language is losing speakers, but it's still being used by children. As long as it's to that point, we can't predict when the last speaker is going to be. As soon as it hits the 7, as soon as it hits where it's only the parent generation and children aren't speaking it at all, then we can predict. We can say, if nothing changes, the last speaker is going to die in about, and then we can put a year on it. So those 7, 8A, 8B, those are, it's 3 generations out, it's 2 generations out, it's 1 generation out. If it's in the green, it's at least 4 generations out. That's all we can say. If it's five or six, we're not trying to capture that.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have. Let's thank our speaker.